Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
With this week's episode of Calci with Cappuccino. As always, Kristen Kubo, Dre Cordero, Aaron West here, and Marco Messina. We will be running through the match day 16 recap with a look ahead to this weekend. We had 10 total fixtures in one single day, so it was pure drags. I am joined by Dre here, and I think we're going to start this hour. Is it an hour? I don't know. With the big Napoli-Inter match, because that seems to be the biggest bang from yesterday as we try to jog back through our own paces. Like hanging in there today, Dre?
I think you're channeling your inner like radio host. It's like, we'll start this hour. I think Inter and Napoli is a really good place to start, right? Because we were all wondering, like, when was Napoli going to suffer that first loss? I don't know that any of us really expected them to go undefeated for the season. But what I'm curious about is who's jumping off the bandwagon? Like, who is, you know, hitting the ejection seat, you know, one loss after 52 days away from action with Inter basically playing for their Serie A lives this match, right? Because Inter were facing the prospect of being 14 points off the pace of the league leaders. They went into this game without Brozovic, who we've talked about how important he is in past episodes. And it really, I mean, for all the pukey sports cliches, it was as close to a January must-win match as Inter could have, given that their aspirations at the start of the season were not to finish top four, but to win the Scudetto, to, you know, bring back Lukaku, because that was the missing piece. And Lukaku starts for the first time since August. I feel like there's so many really, really good storylines here. But to me, the biggest one is that Simone Inzaghi got it absolutely right. And we've been praising Lucio Spalletti all season for the work that he's done and how much and how thoroughly Napoli have just dominated teams, whether it was in the Champions League or in Serie A. But this was a case in which, without sort of dominating the match necessarily, right, because all the possession was with Napoli and certainly they had, you know, a handful of chances, I thought Inzaghi sort of channeled his inner Antonio Conte, gave us a version of Inter that looked like the version that won the Scudetto, with an imperious Edin Dzeko, starting both the big guys up top, Dzeko alongside Lukaku. I thought the best of the match was the combination of the three center backs, with Acerbi in the middle, Acerbi, Bastoni, and Skriniar. Nicolo Barella, who looked like the Barella that we saw at...
Oh my God, Barella, yeah. I feel like for him specifically, it hurt my heart that we didn't have an Italy presence at the World Cup, because his, like, him showing as he did yesterday was just like, no, we deserve to see that. We deserve that.
Yeah, and so if you're looking at the, like, Barella Brozovic would have been, you know, the matchup that everybody wanted to see, because they're so, like, important to, or that the midfield is what makes basically Inter tick. But Çalhanoğlu filled in really admirably. And actually, like, I'd love to get into some of the ways that they limited Napoli, because, again, Napoli have been as good as they are. But you saw the work defensively, Aaron, from Lukaku and from Edin Dzeko to deny that availability of Laborka, right? Like, Laborka's made Napoli tick all season long. They're talking about a contract extension for him. Granted, it's one game. I don't want to draw like huge declarative statements and conclusions from it, but to see the two Inter strikers work defensively like they did to limit the metronome of Napoli, I thought was a credit to Inzaghi. To see Çalhanoğlu be that sort of Third option, Çalhanoğlu would sometimes follow Lobotka into like the final third. Instead of sitting back deep like a regista or like a defensive midfielder, like he was there helping Dzeko and Lukaku put pressure on Lobotka. The work that they did on Kvaratskhelia was just absolutely brilliant. Like they kicked him back to Georgia. Škriniar, I think, intimidated him early on, was really physical. There was one moment in the 51st minute where, you know, Kvara's not having his best game. He actually ended up being substituted in the 76th. But around the 50th minute, he dribbles at Darmian. Darmian got the start. Škriniar is standing just behind Darmian, just salivating with like a club in his hand in case Kvara gets through. And Edin Dzeko is coming back. This is like right at the edge of the area. And they're putting three guys, putting pressure on Kvara and frustrating him. So I thought they got so much right from the tactics board, and it was executed perfectly. I don't know how much that carries over for Inter into the following rounds. I don't know how much of that carries over for Napoli into the following rounds, but you gave Inzaghi 50 days to game plan for the most important match Inter have had this season, and he got it exactly right.
Yeah, I said this on air
yesterday.
I said this on air yesterday. This Inter looked like Antonio Conte's Inter. It looked like the Inter we saw under Simone Inzaghi from the beginning, kind of that same intensity of Conte's Inter, but still the creativity, the freedom, the way that they were pressing yesterday. You could like see the fear in Kvara's eyes every time he got the ball. Like it was, like you said, it was Darmian immediately on him, and then Škriniar just waiting, Barella barreling towards him, just ready to just eat him up. The work from the two strikers yesterday was insane. We were Marco and I and the rest of the gang were a little bit, we weren't sure about that partnership of Dzeko and Lukaku, two big guys, but in practice, it was fantastic. The way that they complemented each other, the way that they moved off each other, the way that they seemed like they'd been playing with each other for years. Like, I'd be a little bit worried if I was Lautaro coming back. Because the way those guys played together was fantastic. They just looked, as a team, they looked so hungry and unified. And for as bad as I think the break was for Napoli, breaking their stride, breaking that rhythm, it was fantastic for Inter. You could tell they definitely put some sort of work in on the training ground over the holiday, over the break, and they looked so good. I'm not ready to jump off the Napoli bandwagon. I think that's foolish. I think number one, we have to like caveat the initial expectations for Napoli is like, yes, they're playing fantastic, but I think we've all warned this is still Napoli.
this is their first loss. And it was against
them
Inter,
with pressure, you know? As it gets closer and closer. It's been 6 weeks though. It's been 6 weeks without them having kicked a ball as a team. Some of them went to the World Cup, some of them didn't. They're playing an Inter at home, like Dre said, under so much pressure. So no, I don't think we can draw any definitive conclusions from this, except that there's a lot to hope for from Inter fans. I think that's a very strong conclusion we can draw from this one.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I agree. I think that, you know, when you think about just how the game needed to go, we all, I think except Poppy, had Inter at least getting a point in this one.
Just throwing Poppy under the bus.
Can we add Poppy into this link right now or what? No, but the reason why I say that is just because, like, when you think about what needed to go right for Inter, they had lost five games this season, and you know we're 15 rounds in, right? 16 rounds in, whatever it is, and they only lost four games all of last year. And the games that they lost were all to the top eight. It was all the direct matchups that this is a team, an Inter side that needs to compete, that needs to be in the Scudetto race. This was a huge moment for them to come out and say, "Hey, we are going to challenge and at least get a point against the top team, the best team in the league." And that attitude, I thought from top to bottom, Inzaghi got it perfectly right. And he had 11 men on the pitch who all fought as one. And that's what I love. Inter have the second best attack in the league. So I wasn't really scared about their goal scoring. And the fact that they got Lukaku back, which I still think Lukaku is amazing and what he provides. My fear was defensively because they conceded too many goals, which was uncharacteristic of what I expect from an Inter side. They did that so well against Napoli yesterday. And they're such a scary team when they get going and they look possessed. They literally look like they had this fire in their eyes that they were not going to be beat. So this Inter side did amazing. I also do think, I know we had this discussion yesterday on air, I do think it was a little bit as well of Napoli just not performing on the night as well. It's credit to how they were limited, but at the same time, I do think that Napoli slipped up in a sense too.
Oh, yeah, so I'm happy you said that because, like, all right, so there's a sense that, oh, it's Napoli and you know, you don't expect them to run away with it and yada, yada. But I think, like, you show respect to Napoli by treating them like the favorites. And when the favorite slips up and doesn't play well and doesn't, like, live up to the expectation and the hype that they've set for themselves, I think you hold them to account. Like, this was not a good Napoli side. This was not a good Napoli performance, I should say. It's very horizontal, a lot of side-to-side passing. Like, they were afraid to take risks. They seemed to get intimidated by... So the Curva was back and united at San Siro for this match for the first time in a long time. Sort of a new look. They got rid of all, like, the individual banners and now just have, like, one long 100-meter banner that sort of talks about their unity. So it was loud, it was aggressive, but I thought Napoli shrunk. Like, yeah, maybe it was a little bit of rust, a little ring rust, but the side-to-side passing that we saw, the disproportionate amount of touches that the defenders were getting just in their own half, like, yeah, you can have 70% possession, but if you have it all in your own half between Minje and Rahmani, and by the way, Rahmani looked really, really rusty. I can understand why Spalletti went with him because he's one of the better defenders in Serie A, but he did not.
He wasn't expected to start as well. Like, I was, when we were reading into it, one of the good things was, of course, Rahmani coming back, but he was coming back off injury. So yeah. I was surprised. I mean, I get it compared to Juan Jesus, but yeah, I agree with that.
And then on the other side of that, like, yeah, that may be like a really feel-good moment for Inter in that their Scudetto dreams weren't completely sort of just short of mathematically, you know, dashed. But also, like, to highlight the enormity of the task that Inter still have ahead of them, if they are talking Scudetto. Marco, you talked about those four losses. They lost four games in the first eight rounds this season, right? So, like, they were ninth place, 8 points off the pace, having this disastrous season after match day eight. They've turned it around. They've won seven of the last eight, right? So seven wins, one loss, and no draws in the last eight games. They're up to fourth place. They're in Champions League position. They're still 8 points back. They're exactly the same number of points back as they were after eight rounds from Napoli, which speaks to just how good Napoli have been when it comes to adding up points and just how difficult the task still is for Inter. Like, I'm not buying Inter in the Scudetto race just yet, unless we see, you know, a string of two, three of these kinds of performances where they look like the Inter that didn't win a Scudetto.
My man, Dre said.
Wait, hold up.
Yeah, this is too amicable. This is all too amicable.
Don't put them in that race yet. Don't you do it.
I think also defensively, though, is the worry. Like, I was looking at how many goals they conceded in their first 15 last year, and I believe it was 8 goals less than what they did at this point. And yes, I know they had this poor start to the season, obviously. Champions League, they look really good. I still think, though, like, from I think that Serie A, it's such a competitive top four, right? So all four of the teams that we have, the Milans, the Napoli, the Inter, and the Juventus, no one is running away with it. And I would not be surprised by who wins it between the four. Like, I would not be like, wow, I can't believe Milan did it. Milan were able to come back into it. All of them have something about their teams that as the season continues to progress, and we're still only 16 matches into this.
Yeah.
It would be historic.
I think it would be way too early.
If Inter come back from an 8-point deficit, or they were even further back at the start of the year, 11 points off the pace. If Inter were to come back from a double-digit deficit to win the Scudetto, that would be historic. Like, you say, you wouldn't
it's
be
like what Juventus did a couple years ago.
Sorry?
It's like what Juventus did a couple of years ago when they started really poorly.
And it was historic. It was in the middle of a nine consecutive Scudetti run. That's what I'm saying. Like, it's not the kind of thing, oh, I wouldn't be surprised. I would be surprised. Like, just, I would have told you in like 2011 or whatever, that I would be surprised to see Juve win nine consecutive Scudetti. Like, yeah, sure, it happened, but I would be surprised to see it happen. Just as I would be surprised to see Inter turn around, given how much ground they have to make up, given that they've won seven of the last eight and are exactly where they were in terms of points back from the league leaders.
Mm. I think things can change like extremely quickly. I believe that they have the squad to do it. I guess I believe in Inzaghi, and I believe that they haven't done things the right way, and they're still within touching distance. I get that it's a lot of points still to make up, but there's also a lot of time, and that's also considering that Napoli continues on this incredible run, which we still don't know if they will.
Under Antonio Conte, and when Inter have been at their best in recent seasons, the role of the three center backs has been sort of everything, right? Like, they usually play like in a mid block, like they're not that deep back. The center backs are a little bit higher up the pitch because they're sending a lot of long balls up to Lukaku, in this case, Edin Dzeko. Like, that direct line, there was a pass from Acerbi, who was basically level with his own 18-yard box, to Lukaku, who's in opposition territory, on just a direct counterattack. That was just magic from the 35-year-old Acerbi. Bastoni can distribute passes out of the back and can also, you know, get forward and link up. Like, if this is the Inter that we see going forward, which is not the Inter we've seen under Inzaghi. Inzaghi prefers shorter passes. He wants more possession. Again, we said he's channeled his inner Antonio Conte, because this looked like Conte's team. Long balls to Lukaku, really stretching defenses, the physicality of the forwards, making it difficult for them. That's an Inter that I think, you know, secure firmly in the top four. I still think it's probably too much ground to make up, but at least it looks like one that we have seen win in the past.
I agree. I think that right now as a squad, they look very cohesive, and that's obviously integral to them winning. But more importantly, I think the Inzaghi that you get has been the greater sort of tip of the scales. I had argued in the past back and forth whether, you know, where Conte was able to build this like excellent foundation, you know, like, can Inzaghi be the one that builds the house on it? And would say yes, but then you see these pockets of sort of like inexplicable. Now, is it limitation? Is it, you know, what else is transpiring? But like, the more he leans into that Conte formula, they achieve.
Victor Osimhen is still being followed around by Acerbi today. Like, as he's going along, like, running his errands, he went to the corner store. Like, he's still being followed around by Acerbi everywhere that he goes. Like, Acerbi really had him in his pocket.
Which, to your point, like, even Acerbi looked like, and we were talking a little bit before we jumped on the pod, like, Andre had pointed out, you know, like, Acerbi looks amazing for Acerbi.
Also, all worth noting that, and I don't want to stereotype too much, but Neapolitans are notoriously superstitious people. Mm. And on, you know, early in December, a certain Canadian rapper put on a vintage Napoli zip, and the very first official match that Napoli plays after that, they lose for the first time all season. So,
well, you know what's funny? We have some Napolitani that work with us, and I spoke to Gio yesterday. You guys all know Gio. I asked him yesterday, I said, oh, you know, what happened? He goes, no, don't worry. He had some stat pulled out that they've always lost their first game in the opening new year, and they could still get back. So, don't worry, they have that solved, right?
I'm still high on Napoli. For me, they'd have to whiff like the next two for me to jump off the bandwagon. I think that they're going to still come back hammering. If anything, they're going to take this loss as a significant lesson. Although I too was Spalletti chewing my pen cap in the latter part of that match yesterday. It was hard to watch.
We should probably move on from that game because there was a CONCACAF debutante in Serie A. And for this time, it wasn't an American, right? It wasn't.
Dun, dun, dun.
Memo Ochoa covering himself in glory despite Salernitana's 2-1 loss to Milan. Probably a lot to pick at here as well, like good and bad for Milan. But Memo Ochoa is probably a good place to start because his, you know, very first game following the World Cup, his debut in Serie A, gives up a goal to Leao 10 minutes in which I wouldn't kill him for it. I think he was in a bad, sort of put in a bad spot because the defense sort of fell asleep. Leao is running through, you know, free, and he's got a decision to make, and he decides to come out, and Leao just easily touches the ball past him and on a tight angle scores. It makes the goalkeeper look bad. I don't know that it was a huge blunder by Memo Ochoa, but after giving up a goal 10 minutes in, after falling behind 2-0 after 15 minutes, he came up with unbelievable saves, right? Tonali, yeah, made it two. I think Brahim Diaz, I think, had the assist for Tonali.
Yeah, but all in, yeah. Memo with 9 saves, okay? So he really, I mean, Salernitana really could have had, really had racked up like a double-digit goal fest on behalf.
Of not just the number of saves also, but the quality of the saves, right? Like, I'm still trying to figure out how Giroud did not get on the score sheet yesterday. Like, the number of shots that he took from inside the area, as hard as he hit them. Memo had a couple of double saves as well. Like, I'm not the biggest Memo Ochoa fan, but I thought he was brilliant for Salernitana on his debut.
I love Memo. I acknowledge that he has typically had a bit of a ledge between his national team duty performances and club. However, I do love him, and I think that he will be a huge boost for Salernitana for this, at least next 6 months that he's contracted. But yeah, he's got a lot of heavy lifting to do in contrast. So we'll see. I don't know who else is on the Memo celebratory welcome committee with me.
I fear that we're going to see a lot of these types of games where it's like 6, 7, 8 fantastic memo saves, and then it's like Salernitana win loses 3-2 or loses 3-1. I think we're going to see a lot of those.
I always loved Ochoa. I mean, we had this conversation yesterday on you know, players that perform more for their national team than they do in their club teams, right? It's always a funny debate. And I mean, not to you know, cry over spoiled milk, but you know, we use like Immobile as the counter example of someone who doesn't do it for his national team, and then for his club he does, right? And I mean, I love Ochoa. I think it's hilarious that I have personal friends of mine who are Mexican and are messaging me about Salernitana now, like to watch their game. I just think that's really fun.
All the gateway ambassadors we can get. I love that.
Me too. I'm all for it. But yeah, it's great. And I mean, I think obviously Milan were too strong. And again, Leao being the first one to score in 2023, I thought made a lot of sense just for the type of player that he is. When we were watching him, I think just like the sentiment was, I felt like I was watching a player playing a league of his own. I mean, just the way that he burst past defenders, the skill that he has to do that, and the ease in which he can do it. I feel like I'm watching a superstar almost every time that I watch Leao. And I know there's always argument, and we have said it in the past, which is fair, that there's some games that, you know, he doesn't show up and he doesn't have like a solid 6 or 7 out of 10 performance, right? He usually has these like 8 or 9, and then sometimes he's poor. But I feel like we are witnessing the start of a really huge player in our league.
I feel like Leao has like this ability to show up, though, even with like the scant playing time that he had during the World Cup. Like, he was creating an impact, and I think that for him, he understands his role and importance in doing that. But also, like, you know, I think a little bit of it is like, hey, you know what? Like, if this is what I have to work with here, and these are the minutes that I'm getting, then like, I'm going to show out, which is, I love that.
Yeah, he scored 2 minutes in against Fiorentina in the last game before the World Cup, comes back from the World Cup and scores 10 minutes in to his first game back against Salernitana. I don't know how much he has left to prove in Italy, which I think is maybe a little bit of a concern for Milan fans. But I do think that if they want to sell him, the best thing you could do is extend him, right? Because his contract runs out in 2024. And I think his price goes up significantly if you have him locked down for much, much longer. I think that's probably what Maldini is trying to do. I don't know that they believe they're going to be able to keep him long-term, but I'm not trying to like channel my inner Fabrizio Romano. I suspect that the idea is to like sign him before you eventually deal him to Chelsea or wherever that is. Okay, let me ask you guys a question. If you're Roberto Mancini, is Sandro Tonali a locked starter for you with the Italy national team right now? Because he was absolutely, like, we can talk about Leao all day. I thought Tonali was man of the match.
I love Tonali. I agree with you. I think that his leadership and, you know, one thing, and it's always funny with young players, he had this when he started on Milan. You know, a lot of people were like, oh, he's too young to be in this position. He has cemented himself in a player that looks like a true leader for Milan. And for the Italian national team, the one great thing that Italy does have is great midfielders, which does make the debate tough. But I think that he is becoming that player because you need an anchor, you need a workhorse, and he's got the talent. But he also puts in the hustle into his game. And to do it for Milan and to have won the Scudetto, you just build so much experience and leadership that I think in the Italian national team, we do need.
That's an awesome job of not answering the question, right? Like, I didn't ask you if you loved Tonali. I asked you if he starts for
yes, Italy.
Yes, he starts.
Well, it's a tough one because of how many great players we actually do have in our midfield. Like,
Barella's a lock.
I say that he'll start.
Yeah,
Verratti for me always starts.
Okay, that doesn't leave very many places.
I know, that's why. So between Tonali, Locatelli, Pellegrini, who I'm still such a huge fan of, like the rotation of them is great. If you need to put in a more defensive performance, then yeah, Tonali is a lock.
Hey everyone, this is Jimmy Conrad, your favorite former U.S. men's national team player and the host of the Call It What You Want podcast. And I'm here to tell you that Vuori is a versatile clothing brand that speaks my language. It's inspired from the coastal California lifestyle, just like me. Its products stand the test of time. just like me, and also just like me, it endeavors to inspire others to live vibrant, healthy lives. Fiori gear is designed to look great in everyday life while also being perfect for any workout activity. I'm currently rocking the Men's Sunday Performance Jogger, and don't let the name deceive you. You can wear these babies any day of the week and in any situation. I'm talking going to the office, running errands, the gym, whatever your heart desires, because Fiori is an investment in your happiness. For our listeners, they are offering 20% off your first purchase. So get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at Vuori.com/sports. That's Vuori.com/sports. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75 and free returns. Again, go to Vuori.com/sports and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.
Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
I think he's always in the rotation and always, like, if you're playing three midfielders, he's probably a starter. If you're playing a pivot, I'm not sure, but I like, there is an embarrassment of riches in Italy's midfield right now, you have to say.
Yeah, we always do 4-3-3, so we get three to choose from. The two that I said, Barella and Verratti, I would never move. I would never, never move. Just because I think that they're too good. If we're talking about right now,
I'm more fixed on Barella than Verratti, honestly. And I don't know if it's just like my own personal bias.
Dre, you think he's a lock, Tonali?
It's literally because he doesn't play in Serie A and has never played in Serie A. Christine, you have a Serie A bias. It's fine. It's okay.
I think Verratti and Barella are a lock, and I think the fact that those two guys are a lock means Tonali is on the outside looking in. Like, I just, because I would want a more attack-minded third central midfielder with Barella and Verratti. So that would leave guys like Locatelli and Tonali probably on the outside looking in. And if Fantasi was in better form, I think he would probably be in my three-man Italian midfield. Speaking of Locatelli.
Yeah. I was right on that chair. I'm like, let's move on to the Juve Cremonese match. We can still call that a match. It was an interesting one because it's now Juve's seventh consecutive match unbeaten, though it did not look like it could have, should have been, perhaps.
So seven straight wins, not just to be right. So they've won the last seven out of nowhere, and it's like, it's not that difficult to sort of analyze. Well, maybe if we get more in depth, but basically they just don't concede goals. Like, Juventus currently do not concede goals. They won all seven games via clean sheets. They hardly give up shots on goal, let alone goals. Like, the goalkeeper, whether it's Szczesny or Mattia Perin, are insanely protected. You may hate Allegri's style. You may have been part of the sort of Allegri out brigade, but when an Allegri team is playing the way that Allegri wants, you simply don't score against them. Mm-hmm. And that's, you get the fear of like, oh, well, if they go up early enough, then we might as well go for a walk or something, because the rest of the game is going to be really boring. This was the opposite. This was 0-0 until, you know, beyond the 90th minute.
Yep.
And it took an Arik Milik free kick, which was a sort of a weird free kick as well, right? He gets set to, you rarely see players from that angle go for the bottom corner.
It's because the wall was the worst wall we've seen in about 6 or 7 years.
Yeah, that wall was definitely like relegation vintage construction, duct tape and prayers. Like, it was.
It's like the famous Roman ruins of Italy was the wall in front of
it. It was worthy of
such a janky wall. You could like see the goalkeeper looking through the gaps in it, like, oh, here's the ball. It's probably going to go in, but there it is.
I mean, bless him. But yeah, it took the pocket change minutes to get a goal out of Milik. Well, the rest of Juve too. I don't know. It wasn't, for me, it wasn't all that dazzling of a match. I want more and better, especially against Cremonese. I mean,
I want the Weston McKennie that we see play for the US, play for Juventus. Like, I know that that's got to do with Allegri. You know, he's got sort of has a bit of a different role, even though Allegri, when he, you know, came back, the first thing that he said about McKennie is that he liked that he had goals in his legs. But it just, McKennie just seems, I mean, compared to what we see when he plays with the United States, and obviously, you know, much bigger role for him. He's one of the leaders and sort of like the spirit animal of the USA national team. But he's just so within himself when he plays for Juve. And he's so rarely arriving in the areas that like lead arriving run or just crashing into the box to create the kind of chaos that we see him do with the US national team. And the range of passing and playmaking that we see when he plays for the Americans.
I think that it, to add to the extra layer there, is we also saw a different McKennie under Pirlo. And I think that that was probably the better, freer McKennie than under Allegri. And I mean, yeah, like I've been rooting for him all along. I think he certainly has it in him. It's nice to know that Allegri still has that vote of confidence in McKennie. I just, you know, I want to see him happy and doing his wacky goals and making those runs again. And just, yeah, longing for some of that, like, fresh legs from when he first arrived in Serie A.
I don't want to speculate too much, but I low-key think we see a man who is on his way out. I don't think he's, like, I've seen a lot of rumors swirling around. This is not a rumor mill, but from what I see on the outside, very much on the outside, it looks like he's moving on. It just looks like that to me.
Yeah, I'm with Aaron. I really I think that they're desperately trying to sell him in January for funds at the moment. At least that's what a lot of the reports are saying in Italy. And I don't know how big the place will be. I think if he stays, he has a lot to contribute to the team. But I think, you know, if you talk about what Juventus has going on behind the scenes as well, he's the one midfielder that they could actually raise money for. So I do think that they're trying to let him go in January, but I don't know if it'll happen or not.
All right. This seems like a good place then to inject this little CIES study that I was looking at earlier today, right? Because the transfer window has opened for January, where people are talking in transfer news, which is my most hated time of the year. I absolutely hate the mercato, but it is what it is. It's open. It's part of the business. So it's like sort of grit your teeth and bear it.
I love just seeing how pained Dre is having to do this.
My face is contorted. Like, yeah. It's
why would you do this to me?
I'm
how dare
sweating.
You?
Like, it's not comfortable. I did find a list compiled by CIES, a study. They go through their methodology. It's pretty interesting. They, you know, take into account, you know, players' ages, the level they're playing at, the length of their current contract, all of these sort of variables that will impact the transfer value of a player. And in the 100, according to this study, in the 100 top valued players on the planet, there's only 9 Serie A players. And I was a little bit surprised, not necessarily by the 9, but by the order of these 9. And so I'd love to know if you guys could, hopefully you haven't seen the study yet, you're not cheating going on online, if you could try and guess between the 3 of you who the podium is and what the order of the podium is. The 3 most valuable players, you know, given their contract, given their age, given the level they're playing at in Serie A.
Sheesh.
Okay. You just got to think about who's linked to Premier League teams.
Well, this one's tough because you said all the factors, like, yeah, their age, length of contract, which immediately for me, that like takes Rafa Leao out of it. His contract is up in 24, right? You got to think about like players who are relatively young, probably attackers or midfielders, probably longer contracts. So that, like, off the top of my head, I'm trying to think of like players. Okay, Vlahovic has to be on there.
Yeah,
Vlahovic has to be in the top 3.
Lautaro. Lautaro's been linked.
That's
with
a
Barca.
Really good shout, actually, because he just signed a new contract, didn't he?
He's
like
under
recently in the last
26.
Few months. Yeah, he's got, okay, so.
He and Vlahovic are locked in until 2026, which has a lot to do with, because Lautaro's 25. Okay. Also, he's not the youngest player on this list by any means.
Yeah.
But both of those are.
Milinkovic-Savic is how old?
Who is?
Milinkovic-Savic is like 28,
29. I think so.
Okay, I don't think he'd be on here. How old is Barella?
I was going to say, is he really that young?
Barella's 25.
He's like 25.
He's almost 26, actually.
He just signed a new contract recently, though.
Barella's a good shout. I like Barella.
So you guys nailed it with three tries. With three tries, you nailed it.
Really? Top.
Can you get the order? It's Lautaro.
Well,
Lautaro Barella. Or no, Lautaro.
Oh, I thought Vlahovic.
Barella.
Oh.
This is absolute chaos. It's my own fault. I was like, can you guys guess? And then I was just going to say Lautaro, Vlahovic, and Nicolo Barella. Lautaro comes in at 87.5 million euro. Vlahovic, 82.4. And Barella at 80.1. The rest of the list is wild to me. And so, granted, this is a list of 100, right? And so Lautaro being the top among the Serie A players comes in at 29th overall. So no Serie A players in the top 20.
So is it Premier League heavy?
I'm not going to go through the 100, but yes, of course, the Premier League players. Like Jude Bellingham is actually the number one most valuable player according to the study. Again, age, length of contract, interest from your from Premier League clubs. But Leao comes in at number four. And 60th overall, like Aaron said, the contract expiring in 2024 would have a lot to do with that.
Leao would have been my number one, and without the contract, Leao would have been my first prediction.
They have him valued at 67.3 million euro, which is why they love to sort of lock him up to a long term deal that would drive that price up. Teo Hernandez is next.
Oh, so
he's fifth.
I forgot about him.
Five.
Okay,
that's a good one. That's a good shout.
Tonali's sixth.
Is he?
Then Tammy Abraham.
It gets right.
Oh boy. When was this list compiled?
Raspadori comes in at number eight among Serie A players. He's only 22 years old, I think, and under contract until 2027. And then rounding out the list of Serie A players on this, Bastoni, which shouldn't come as a surprise.
But okay. Raspadori is the youngest among them. Then
Raspadori and Tonali are both, and Vlahovic are all 20.
Oh, right.
In my brain,
Vlahovic is older than he is. I don't know why it's like
he looks like a player from the 1930s.
He does. but he also looks like he could be 35, and I'd believe him.
Vlahovic looks like he plays with a leather ball and one of those kicks.
Maybe it's his hair.
Yeah, I think it's the hair.
It's literally everything about him. Like he has the old school face, like the classic features. He has the hair, like he just looks like literally. Right. If you did the single part down the middle, slicked it back, and threw like a pinstripe, a baggy pinstripe suit on him, and took a black and white photo, you would not be able to tell the difference between him and his dad.
You could easily slot him in like reruns of The Honeymooners and not notice.
if and when we send Marco or Aaron to Italy to interview Vlahovic, and he does it in English, he's going to sound like an old timey gangster. It's going to be that Chappelle show, like it's how I talk. See. Yeah, that's the look that you get from Dusan Vlahovic.
Oh my God!
Wait, so Dre, amongst the Italians, Barella was first as the most valuable.
No, among the Italians, yeah. One and two were Lautaro and Vlahovic. But I'm not too surprised by that. I mean, Barella is
I would have thought Chiesa, but I guess the injury. But
that's an interesting one, actually. I
don't know why. I would have guessed Chiesa first.
The long injury has nothing to do with that. Like Barella to me is very, very close to I've given you guys my definition of like my very specific definition of world class, which is a player I believe would start on any, didn't matter where he went, went to Bayern Munich, went to Real Madrid, went to Barcelona, he would start on that team. Barella for me is, if not very close to that, already there as one of those world class players that could start for any team.
Interesting. Wow.
Yeah, his contract expires in 2025, which would drop his value a bit, which is probably why it makes sense.
Yeah, between the injury and then that.
Yeah, but Bastoni's contract expires in 2024.
Oh, wow.
Which of those guys would you suspect is more valuable?
Chiesa.
Is this a good place to say goodbye?
I mean, well, let's run through. We've got obviously full coverage starting on Saturday from 11:30 a.m. We've got Matteo Bonetti and Dre Cordero on the call for Juve at noon. Sunday, again, also 11:30 a.m. onward. P+, both days. Saturday, Juve Udinese, you can also catch on CBS Sports Network. And if you've not yet subscribed, we have the promo code still for a 30-day free trial, Serie A. I guess we can comfortably stop here. We will catch you next week. Thank you from all of us, Marco, Aaron, Dre, and I. Ciao a tutti. Until we see you again next week.
Ciao. See ya.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.